Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Rego Hutzenberg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 116 for the weekend starting Friday, 21 November 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No churnalism on Tech Central.
No, unlike those other guys, we haven't worn out our Control C and V keys here. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central, on Google Plus at Plus Tech Central, and on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about the slump in telecoms capex.
Also on the show, we talk about Google's Project Loon Karoo balloon crash and the best smartphones of 2014.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we must pay the bills. We'll be back in a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show.
How's it, Duncan?
How's it, Richard? So, a bit slower news week than it was last week, but still a few interesting stories and one or two offbeat pieces to talk about.
Yes.
Let's get straight into it. Let's start with something a little more serious, though, and that's Telkom's results, which came out on Monday. Interim results for the 6 months ended 30 September 2014. And the thing that stood out for me the most in these results was the CapEx line, Telkom's capital expenditure for the six-month period, which fell off a cliff. If you look at the numbers, for the 6 months ended September compared to 2013, their capex, which includes spend on intangible assets, decreased by 42.8% to 1.8 billion rand from 3.2 billion rand a year ago. That is a massive decline. Just looking at the Tech Central story we ran on this, that capex number represents just 11.4% of group operating revenues, which is well below the guidance that they provided for the full year of capex spending of 14 to 17%. Now, this all sounds like a lot of financial mumbo jumbo, but what it means is that Telkom hasn't spent as much in the 6 month period on building out its network than it did last year. It spent significantly less, and I think this has to raise alarm bells. Why is the company spending so little money during this period? Now, they came up with a number of I won't call them excuses. They came up with a number of reasons why this happened. The first and the one they spoke about the most was the industrial action, the strikes that occurred across the South African economy during the period to end September, which they say impacted their ability to get materials that would have allowed them to build out their network, particularly fiber networks. They also spoke about impact or the spending on their mobile network, which has decreased even more. And this is the one that really amazes me. CapEx on Telkom's mobile network, I'm just reading here again, decreased by a massive 79.9%, it's called 80%, to just 164 million rand from 815 million rand a year ago. They say this was a result of a more concentrated rollout in major metropolitan areas. But an 80% decline in CapEx on mobile is massive. If you consider that 164 million rand that they spent on their mobile network in the six-month period, and then put it next to the numbers from MTN and Vodacom, even Cell C, it's a drop in the ocean. Vodacom this year, if I remember correctly, is spending 9 billion rand through the full year on its network. 9 billion, that's 9,000 million. Compared to Vodacom, it's a big part, compared to Telkom's 164 million. You can't compete with that level of CapEx investment. Now, it raises questions. You know, you mentioned earlier, Richard, that they've got this deal with MTN, and one has to wonder whether the discussions with MTN have factored into their decision to cut their mobile expenditure CapEx so dramatically.
It could potentially make sense, but still, it's a difficult time to be cutting back on your infrastructure spend. I mean, we it's such a tough race now to get connectivity to South African consumers, especially seeing the market share that the other guys are picking up now with fiber to the home deployments and even LTE with LTE deployments. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Telkom can get out of this. They're going to fall behind.
If they don't ramp up their investment. And it's also worrying in the fixed line market because, you know, Vodacom has announced, in fact, we broke the story, we had an exclusive on it a couple of weeks ago where we said that, we quoted Shamil Yusuf from Vodacom explaining that that Vodacom intends rolling out fiber to 150,000 homes, fiber broadband, fiber to the home, 150,000 homes within 3 years and 100,000 businesses. That's Vodacom making a really big statement of intent about their plans about getting into the fixed line market and going after Telkom's core business of fixed lines. You've got a big, well-resourced competitor coming after your lunch. Do you respond to that by slashing your CapEx?
No, you don't. Definitely not. But again, you know, we never know. Potentially there is something in the works with, or something bigger in the works that we don't know about, especially with MTN. Maybe they're going to come back and give us a...
Well, MTN, I mean, the deal is effectively to outsource and build and management of their network. These numbers suggest that the deal hasn't even been signed yet. They've already decided they're not going to spend on their mobile network, which is concerning. You know, the CEO has denied it. He said the MTN deal has got nothing to do with this, and in fact, they're just consolidating, and their investment will increase again in the second half. They're talking about doubling that 164 million rand investment in the next 6 months, which is a big ramp up again. Still won't get them to last year's spending. But, it's, you know, in the mobile space, we've got Vodacom spending billions and billions. MTN too. Cell C has made announcements about increasing their CapEx as well. In that sort of environment, to keep ahead, you don't cut your spending to the bone. You've got to keep spending because you've got to keep your network going. It's right, I think, that they're judicious in their spending. They shouldn't just go out there and roll out for the sake of rolling out, which I think perhaps Telkom has been guilty of in the past, especially in the mobile side of things. They need to do their planning correctly, which is what they seem to be doing now, and roll out in areas where they know they're going to make a profitable return. Anyway, we'll be watching the story with interest and seeing what that CapEx line looks like at the full year. They're promising that it's going to... that they're going to ramp up their spending and that their full-year CapEx, according to their chief financial officer, Dion Fredericks, will fall within the full-year guidance previously provided of 14 to 17% of a CapEx spend-to-revenue ratio, although he did caution that it's likely to be at the lower end of that 14 to 17%. Still, to even get to that 14%, it's going to require a massive uptick in spending in the second half of the financial year.
Yeah, let's hope we see that turnaround. Because, I mean, we can't afford to have any of our players really cutting back now. Everybody needs to kind of play ball and get South Africa connected in all the areas.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing you want to do, and it's almost sometimes too easy for management to do this because management doesn't tend to be around for the long term. Their CEO moves on eventually. Mm. In the short term, it's always easy to push the share price up by hacking costs and doing certain things like cutting CapEx to the bone. But the long-term damage that you do to the business by not investing now for the future... can be catastrophic. Let's hope that's not what Telkom's doing.
Yeah, let's hope.
Good. I was interested this morning, just briefly, by the way, that Times Media Group, which is one of the country's biggest, it's called them traditional media houses, although they're venturing into new areas like online video, put out a cautionary this morning. They didn't say very much in that cautionary. It was phrased quite interestingly. But they've said, in fact, let me read it to you. Shareholders are hereby advised that there are new developments relating to the company which may have a material effect on the price of the company's securities. Accordingly, shareholders are advised to exercise caution when dealing in the company's securities until a full announcement is made. That cautionary promptly sent the share price up this morning by 16%, although it must be emphasized that was on very thin volumes. I think three trades with marginal and number of shares traded, so it doesn't actually mean very much. But interesting development. So I wonder what's going on at Times Media Group. So could there be some corporate action happening there? Could someone be making a bid for them potentially? That's very difficult to know.
Yeah, it's early days, I guess.
But interesting company, making interesting plays in the online space with the VD, Video On Demand service. Yes. Of course, they publish some of the country's biggest newspapers, the Sunday Times. They publish one of its most important newspapers in Business Day. They also have the Times, the Sowetan, and a number of other assets. They've got a television channel, Business Day TV. Interesting group. I haven't got the first clue what the cautionary could be about, but it'll be an interesting one to see what eventually gets announced, if anything gets announced, of course, because these things don't always lead to anything conclusive. But an interesting one, and the share price up 16%, but again, a pretty meaningless move in the share price given the low volumes of shares traded. Let's move on to some of those offbeat, or the offbeat story of the week, I think.
The offbeat, yeah.
The offbeat story of the week, in fact, generated a huge amount of traffic for us this week, and that was the story that Google's Project Loon, one of its balloons, crash-landed in the Karoo and picked up immediately by a sheep farmer who decided he was going to use it to repaint his farmhouse or something. You've been following this
story? Yeah, I think I've seen a sci-fi movie that started like this as well once.
Are we sure it's a Google balloon?
Exactly. For those of you who don't know, so Google Loon balloon landed in or crashed on a Karoo farmer's land. At first the farmer obviously didn't know what it was. And what was quite funny to me was the fact that he thought the plastic that made up the balloon could be used for his painting purposes.
And he promptly wrapped it all up and put it back on the back of his sheep trailer. Lovely story.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yes,
lovely
yes.
story. Anyway, now, according to reports, a team of experts is flying out. I suspect it's just a salvage crew. A team of experts from Google is flying out to recover their balloon. The farmer, whose name, I think this is the funniest part of the story, his name is Urbanus. His surname is Buerta. Urbanus Buerta. He thought it was a weather balloon from Da'a until someone pointed out to him that, in fact, it had Google written on it. And an American flag, I think, if I recall correctly. And so he realized it was something much more important than that. This farmer, who I think he made clear in his article, isn't particularly tech savvy and doesn't actually use the internet. Didn't realize what it was, but anyway, the team from Google's coming out to rescue it. What I want to know is why this thing came down. Obviously this Project Loon, which is designed to connect the world to the internet through high altitude balloons at some point in the future. It's all in testing at the moment. Why it came down over the Karoo, what happened? I guess Google hasn't said anything yet. Hopefully they will shed some light on it at some point.
I guess there's a number of things that could have gone wrong, especially around the weather pattern that could have maybe forced it out, or even, you know, whatever kept the balloon up, the actual balloon itself could have been damaged.
Indeed. It's all speculation until Google confirms exactly what happened. But certainly an offbeat story and a fun one for this week. Rahab, we, at this time of the year, we're getting close to the silly season again, run a series of best ofs, and one of the more popular best ofs which we ran this week is the best smartphones of the year. We specifically look at high-end phones. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be quite difficult to look at smartphones more broadly because there's so many contenders that put their hands up, like the Lumia 520 or 530, for example, mm-hmm. which is a fantastic cheap low-end smartphone that is actually the best-selling phone in the Nokia, now Microsoft Lumia stable. But we specifically decided to look at the high end of the market and the best devices, the best smartphones in that space. And we put together a list. I think the difficult thing in putting together these lists is always what do you leave out?
With only five to go, and we had so many great options to choose from this year. It really looked like it seemed like all the manufacturers have kind of stepped up the game to equalize the playing field, so to speak. And also in light of the fact that we are seeing two new mobile operating systems from Android's launching the new one, and iOS has launched their new mobile operating system.
Indeed. The controversial thing, as I said, is always what we leave out. You know, there were some interesting devices this year. There was the BlackBerry Passport, which you reviewed earlier in the year, and you actually really liked. It's a keyboard phone. It's squarish.
A square phone, yeah. Mm. Square. It's not a widescreen device. It's a square screen with a square keyboard. BlackBerry fans will definitely love that phone, and anybody that actually uses their device to type a lot. Unfortunately, it wasn't strong enough to land in our top five list. But it's well worth checking out if on the fringes if you are looking for anything like that.
Yeah, indeed. And the other one that I think was probably a controversial decision by us was the decision to leave out the Samsung Galaxy Note 4.
Mm.
Very good device, but at the end of the day, we have to make a call on what makes that top five list. If we'd done a top 10, I think that Samsung would have been at number 6. But just didn't squeak into our top five this year. In fact, no Samsung device has made our list this year, and perhaps controversially as well, given that it has been a hot seller, when we also decided not to include the Samsung Galaxy S5 in our top five this year either.
Yeah, I don't think those offerings were strong enough. I mean, what we have in the top five at the moment is really the strongest contenders. And the kind of phones that we would spend money on at the end of the day. I mean, as geeks and tech fundies, we look at where we would spend our money, and this list certainly reflects that.
Yeah.
But the Nokia Lumia 930 coming in at number 5.
The only Windows Phone device on our list, and I think Rechot, you'll agree it would have been higher on our list if it wasn't for Windows Phone.
Yeah.
We love the operating system, don't get it wrong. It's such a different interface. Whenever we get a reviewed Lumia device, I just love using that interface and the live tiles and all the rest of it. It's just so different to what else is in the market. But the app ecosystem is still not quite there.
It's not as rich as the other stores. It's certainly not. And while you would find a lot of the mainstream applications, you know, what makes the App Store great is really the full scope of applications that you can just, you know, search for and find anything that would work in your specific user environment for argument's sake.
Indeed.
But I do see a bright future for the Windows Phone operating system, especially now that Microsoft's taking it over completely. They're opening up their programming platforms, the development platforms. I think there's a long-term plan in the works here.
Now, if this phone was running Android, I think it would have been higher on our list.
Yeah, the hardware is superb.
The hardware is absolutely fantastic. It's such a great build quality. I like the different colors it comes in, even though they're quite controversial color choices, especially the bright orange and the bright green colors.
Yeah,
It also comes in a more muted white and black. We reviewed the orange one. I must admit, when I first saw it, I gasped almost and said, whoa, who's going to buy this thing? But after a few days of using it, I actually got quite used to it and quite liked it after a while. And I think if you're using a Lumia Windows Phone device, you probably want to tell everyone that you're using something different.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've got a bright orange back, you're telling people when you sit down in a restaurant that you've made a conscious choice not to use an Android phone or an iPhone.
Sure, yeah. Even the more conservatively, the black version is very, very nice as well. It looks very slick, very elegant, and one of the nicer features of the Lumia 930 is it's not the slipperiest phone in the lineup. That rubberized back is a great feature,
and it's such a solid build. The hardware is fantastic. There's no doubt that Nokia, now part of Microsoft, is still brilliant at making fantastic hardware.
No, definitely. And like I said, I think next year or the year thereafter, even we'll see this top 2, top 3 maybe. I can make that prediction. I think Windows Phone is definitely heading in that direction.
It's heading in that direction. I do sometimes think that the Microsoft is iterating too slowly on Windows Phone. The updates are coming far too slowly. We're seeing constant updates on Android, even on iOS. I think that Microsoft's dev cycle on Windows Phone is too slow.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's going to change. I do think
that's going to change. They'll certainly ramp up they'll have to. I mean, especially now that they've taken over the brand.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll see more integrated development from them and more regular updates.
Yeah, absolutely. So our number 4 pick, maybe our most controversial pick on this, this year's list of the top smartphones, and that's the Sony Xperia Z3 Compact. And I think we chose it for first of all because it's a fantastic device, but secondly because of its size. It has a 4.6-inch screen. It is now considered to be a small smartphone, whereas a few years ago it would be considered a large device. But I think it's the only Android phone in that size that delivers that really high-end performance, and the hardware in this thing is fantastic. It's got a 20 megapixel camera that can shoot 4K video. It's got IP68, which means it's waterproof and dust resistant.
Yes.
Which is perfect for Africa. it's a really a solid phone. You don't like the fact though that it attracts fingerprints.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a perfectionist when it comes to my screen being clean. But it's not just smudging. It's quite bad on the Sony Xperia Z3 Compact and Z3, especially if you're not. If you're using it, you know, in an office environment, you know, if you have something in your hand, it's just a little bit untidy. But you can't fault the device for being really superb. Having an all weather device, so to speak, means that this thing can really go anywhere. And it's something I'm surprised that not more manufacturers have started implementing. I mean, yes, Samsung has done it on the S5, and having a phone that's waterproof should be high up on the list for manufacturers, I think. And the Sony Xperia Z3 Compact certainly is the best in that class, I think.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, I'm a big fan of large screen devices. I'm a big fan of the sort of phablet category. No problem carrying a 5.5-inch phone around with me. In fact, if I got the opportunity, I'd probably upgrade to the new Nexus 6, which has a 6-inch phone, which is huge. Six-inch screen rather, which is massive. But there is a big market for smaller screen devices. We've certainly seen that with the iPhone. But there hasn't really been a contender in the space. I mean, we've had things like the LG G3 Compact and the smaller Samsung Galaxy S5, what's it called, the Mini.
Mini, yeah.
But those phones are stripped down in terms of hardware. They're not high-end devices.
Yes.
This is a high-end device in a compact package, and I think is the only phone that really competes, and only phone in the Android world, that is, that really competes head-on with the iPhone.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not only in size or look and feel, but yeah, functionality too. I mean, it is one of the smarter Android phones out there, without a doubt. Mm. If you look at the way that just the little things on the design that Sony's incorporated. This, you know, if you've ever been a fan of Sony hardware in any sphere of their development, I think the Sony would be a winner for you.
For sure. And if you do like a bigger phone, of course, and like Sony products, and what's not to like about them, then the Z3. Check out the Z3.
Oh, yeah.
5-inch display, or 5.2-inch display, I think. Bordering on the phablet category. Mm, so if you like the bigger devices, go check that one out. But if you like the smaller devices, and there are millions of people around the world who do, then the Z3 Compact may be for you.
Definitely.
Rechot, I'm going to leave you to talk about our number three phone of the year this year.
Sure.
That's because you've just bought one, actually. So you're clearly a fan.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the Apple iPhone 6.
So, yeah, it's obviously the latest version in the iPhone range. Apple launched two this year, iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus. The reason why I think the iPhone 6 is such a good device, not only because of a slightly larger screen, but the design really speaks to me. It's a simple phone if you look at the aesthetics. You know, apart from the protruding lens at the back, it's pretty straightforward. Everything you've come to love on the iOS platform is there. It's just better. The phone is very snappy. I haven't had any performance issues on it, obviously. But if you are in an iOS environment, or if you work with people in an iOS environment, family or friends, and you kind of you like that environment where you can either FaceTime somebody or using the messaging feature, which I do a lot, on the iOS platform itself, it's hard to move away from the iPhone.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, that screen is great. I've been playing some games. Videos, obviously, is standard across the range, but across the board. But the iPhone 6 is really the best iPhone that Apple's ever developed. And if you've liked any of their devices before, you'll certainly fall in love with this one.
I'm glad they finally increased the size of that thing, because the iPhone 5 was far too small.
I liked the small size of the iPhone 5 initially. But as soon as I've compared the two, and I've been using the two side by side for the first few weeks of my review of the device, you actually wonder how you ever lived with a smaller screen.
Indeed, it's what us Android users have been saying about Apple users for years. We've gone to bigger 5-inch phones years ago, if I go back and even last year before the iPhone 6 came out, if I went back and used from an Android phone and trying to use an iPhone 5 or an iPhone 5S, it was like, what's wrong with this thing? Why is it so small?
And interesting enough, I mean, for one-handed use, the iPhone 6 still works well. It's got a very nice feature. We double tap on the home button and it slides the screen down slightly.
Oh, does that work on the iPhone 6 as well? I thought that was only an iPhone 6 Plus feature.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And I use it often when I work with one hand.
Yeah, that's very clever. That's a great design or a great software trick.
And that's one of the things that does appeal to me about the iOS platform. Things are slick. You know, it's a very expensive device. I don't know many people that would buy it outside of a contract. But, you know, it works. The platform works very well. There's great applications. Most of the applications land on that platform first. And it's part of the reason why I would spend my own money on it. It's a great device.
Good. Our number two pick this year is actually the phone I ended up buying, and that's the LG G3, which I think almost set the benchmark for these large phablet devices this year for a number of reasons, but I think primarily is because of the display. There's two great things about this phone, really. Number one is the display, which has a 2K resolution for a pixel density of 534 pixels per inch.
That's high, yeah.
It's massive. You could argue that actually it's too high. You don't need to go to that level, and in fact you're just causing unnecessary battery drain.
Yeah.
But whenever I use the device and I'm looking at a high resolution image or a piece of crisp text on the screen, I notice the difference.
Mm.
It's not immediately noticeable if you just quickly glance at a 1080p device and the 2K screen on the LG, but when you use it, you do notice it's the superior screen quality. And
there's a sharpness to it, right?
There absolutely is a sharpness to it, and watching a very high resolution video, of course, as well, is fantastic on that screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second real selling point about the G3 is it's Well, there's actually three selling points. The second one is that it's got an incredibly thin bezel. So despite that massive screen, it doesn't actually look all that big. It's not actually all that big in your hand.
Yeah.
It's still a big phone, don't get me wrong. But it's noticeably smaller, for example, than an iPhone 6 Plus,
yes,
which actually has the same size screen. And thirdly, I think what LG's really got right with this, more so than its predecessor, the G2, which, by the way, was also a very good phone, is that they've left Android largely untouched. It's very vanilla. It's not completely vanilla, but it's very vanilla. So you're getting a proper KitKat experience on the device, and that means, I think, because they haven't fiddled with the operating system so too much, it means that they can update the Android version faster than some of its competitors. And in fact, the Lollipop, the new version of Android, is expected to reach this device in South Africa sometime in December, which is well ahead of most of its rivals. So LG G3 fans can look forward to getting Lollipop quite early on. In fact, I believe I was reading some reports online. I think it's actually been distributed to operators or to consumers through the operators in Poland already. So the Lollipop release is ready.
Looking forward to that one, yes, definitely.
But an excellent phone all round. Perhaps a little bit of criticism about the battery life. It's perhaps not as good, not quite as good as it was on the G2. And that's no doubt down to that high resolution screen and the bigger screen. Really fantastic device. And I must say, I'm really looking forward to seeing what LG comes up with the G4 when it releases that next year.
Oh, yeah. No, they've set the benchmark for this very high for Android devices. That's for
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. But there's one other Android device that pips it to the post. Only just, I must say, we had quite a bit of debate about whether the G3 or this winning device would make it into the number one spot. But after some intense debate, we decided that our number one choice just eked it out. That's pretty impressive, given that this is a phone that actually came out right at the beginning of the year. And so some of the other devices in this list, the iPhone, for example, have had the whole year to catch up in terms of trying to pip it to the post, but they didn't. In our view. Of course, this is a subjective list. We must we must emphasize, and I'm sure there are plenty of other lists out there will pick the iPhone or some other device as the number one smartphone of the year. But our pick this year, Richard, is
the HTC One M8. It definitely is the best Android phone on the market today, not just in terms of look and feel, but performance and overall package. I think HTC really tapped into the heritage of its own devices, which has always been solidly constructed, relatively straightforward, with a few bells and whistles. And the HTC One M8 certainly encapsulates that concept. Duncan and I both use this phone for a long period of time. The only thing that lets it down, unfortunately, is the camera, I think. They should have done more with the dual 4-megapixel camera on the device. But if you look at the performance and the design, I think a lot of people have also commented on the design. Is absolutely amazing.
It looks like something Apple would have produced.
Funny enough, putting the Apple iPhone 6 and the HTC One M8 next to each other, there's a lot of similarities between the two devices. Obviously the rounded back of the HTC is quite unique.
What I love about the One M8 is the front-facing speakers as well. I think they had that in the M7 as well, if I'm not mistaken. Beautiful. So you get wonderful stereo sound when you're watching a video or just leaving your phone upright on the couch.
Yeah, the sound's certainly one of the best producing sound devices, especially for enjoying videos or if you're just catching up on the news and that kind of thing.
I really like the Sense interface as well. I used not to like it, but I think HTC's done some good work. I don't like the... is it called Buzz... What is their news feed called? Blinkfeed.
Blinkfeed, yeah.
I'm going to say Buzzfeed. Blinkfeed. I wasn't a big fan of that, but I was very pleased to see that it's pretty easy to get rid of. Just pinch and drag it to the trash. Other than that, it's a fantastic device. And if you own one, or if you're thinking of getting one, you must get the, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, I think last week's podcast, in fact, you must get the Dot View cover.
Oh, yeah.
Check out last week's podcast for our review of that. But it really adds a touch of cool to the phone as well. Not that it needs any more cool.
It does. It's such a unique feature. And I think if you haven't seen it before, you must check it out. It basically turned the entire screen into a dot matrix type LCD.
Yeah.
Obviously, preserving battery life, but allows you to get access to some information and answer calls without having to open the cover.
Of course, we always expect news from HTC early in the year for their new phone, so around February, usually around the Mobile World Congress time frame, if not at Mobile World Congress.
Yeah.
We should get details of the HTC One M9 and be interested to see. I mean, it's difficult to see how they're going to improve on this device except improving the camera. Actually, quite frankly, if they put a bit of a faster processor in here, maybe put an extra gig of RAM in, and put in a 13 or 20 megapixel camera, you're probably going to have the perfect device.
Oh yeah, I agree. If I agree with the RAM, especially. I think not a lot of manufacturers put a lot of RAM in the devices, and I guess it's one of the most expensive components, which is one of the reasons. But when you're looking at a premium high-end device, I mean, costing is second to the fact that, you know, you want the best of the best of us, at least for those consumers. So yeah, well done, HTC One M8. Our choice of
high-end smartphone of the year. And we look forward to, if you've got any your views on any phones we missed out, no doubt there are a few that, and certainly we did consider quite a few smartphones which didn't make our list, but if there's anything that you think is obvious that we've missed that absolutely should have been in this list and should have been at number one, and HTC definitely does not deserve to be there, let us know. Send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za, or check out the post on our website. Just have a look for best smartphones of 2014 and leave a comment under that story, as many people already have. Excellent. Well, I think that covers the news and features of the week. Let's move on to our regular features of the week, and that's our winners and losers and our pick of the week. Yeah. Let's do our winners and losers first. I think, Richard, our winner this week is an interesting one. We're picking Jean Fisser, who's the CEO of, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. No, it's not Jean, but Jean, I think. Fisser, the CEO of internet service provider AfriHost, which is now owned by MTN. I'm an AfriHost subscriber, and as are you, in
fact. Yes, yes.
And we've both been having issues over the last few weeks with network performance and speeds on their network, and you know, at times the speed has been atrocious, sort of on a par with dial-up modem sort of days, recalling my old US Robotics 28.8 dial-up. And it seems they've been having all sorts of problems. And Jean Fisser sent out an email to their customers this week explaining what is actually going on. And it turns out that it's quite complicated. Go and have a look at the site, because the story is really going to explain it in detail. But it's got to do with these devices that they run, these expensive devices that they've got from an international company, which they're not naming, which are behaving erratically, and they're not shaping traffic correctly and prioritizing traffic correctly, which at peak times on AfriHost network means that consumers aren't getting an optimal experience, and in some cases are getting a quite suboptimal experience. I guess kudos to Jean Fisser for explaining in detail exactly the problems they're facing. I think by doing so, and arguably they should have done it earlier, but doing so, they've engendered, I think, more trust again in the company. And I think there were a lot of questions that were floating around about whether the network problems were associated with the MTN acquisition, and, you know, what is MTN doing to the network, et cetera, post the acquisition of the business. But John has assured his customers that it's got nothing to do with MTN. In fact, MTN is doing its best to try and resolve the issue, as is the unnamed international vendor that supplies this equipment to the company. It sounds like a big, challenging, difficult technical problem, and I'm very glad I'm not one of those engineers having to try and deal with this issue, because it does sound like something that you're going to lose a lot of sleep over.
Yeah, I mean, the hardware that manages your network like that's probably the most critical part of your network. And if that doesn't work, then you have major issues. I think there's a few guys with grey hairs at the moment trying to figure this one out.
But kudos to Jean Fisser for sending out an email. I think they should have probably been a bit clearer earlier on as to what their challenges were. I suppose it's a bit of a pride issue that comes into it as well.
Okay.
But kudos for spelling it out and coming clean with customers about what the issue is. I was actually giving consideration to moving to another ISP purely because of the bandwidth problems I've been experiencing with them. But I'll probably stick with AfriHost for a while longer and give them the benefit of the doubt now.
As long as they keep their double data, they will be happy.
Indeed. And of course, plenty of rumors doing the rounds. They've been sending out emails, and a certain website's been publishing them verbatim and perhaps doing their marketing on their behalf, but let's not go there. They're considering introducing this thing called AfriHost Plus, which looks at face value to be a way of getting rid of their double data promotion, which I think a lot of people have signed up to AfriHost just to get access to. For example, if you have a 150 gig capped account, you get another 150 gig effectively free of charge, which means your bill is effectively half what you'd pay otherwise. It's a fantastic deal, and the suggestion I think that we saw with the emails that Jean sent out regarding this in the last week or so is that this double data deal may be ending, and you may have to subscribe to this AfriHost Plus deal like at, premium service, at 99 rand a month. So it kind of sounds a bit like Amazon Prime, I guess. That's probably where they got the idea from. For which you'll get things like Symfy Africa music streaming, plus the double data. I think what people want is the double data. They don't want all this other stuff bundled with it as well.
I guess, in some ways, some people will be able to justify it. I mean, 60 Rand for SimFi, which I subscribe to, and 40 Rand then extra over and above that to get to the 99 Rand to get double data. I think you can justify it. It's still not nice to see, but... Yeah. Let's hope things go back to the way they were.
Indeed. But, other people, I think, have already made plans. A lot of my friends are Spotify users. I use Google Music, Play Music.
Sure.
I don't want to use Symfy. I've got nothing against Symfy, but I'd prefer to subscribe directly to the US services and just use a VPN to get around it for the initial sign-up. And I get a better collection of music. I'm not really interested in the local music that's offered. I don't really listen to local music. I'm not sure if you should be admitting this on the podcast.
That's what I like. That service, it's good, great South African music.
Okay, there we go. He's a big supporter on the Tech
Central
podcast.
But let's just clarify, not Afrikaans South African music, English.
No, Steve Hoffman.
South African music. yes.
Okay, nothing wrong with Afrikaans music. Excellent. Well, it's our loser this week. I almost forget the loser. Our loser this week's easy. It's Zandile Ellen-Chabalala, the chair of the SABC, who is just doggedly staying on as the SABC chair, even though... everyone in Parliament, not just the DA, but the ANC and all the other political parties, want her suspended from her position. She's taking them to court. She's doing everything she can to avoid, basically facing up to these allegations that she lied to get the position of SABC chair. She lied about her qualifications. Mm. And UNISA has said she does not have these qualifications, which she claims she has. So... on what basis she continues to stay at the SABC, I do not know. Perhaps she feels protected by the president, and certainly there's some allegations that were published there in a Sunday tabloid at the weekend, which made for rather interesting reading. Whether those allegations are true or not, who knows, but interesting reading nonetheless. But she's doggedly staying on in this position. And one has to ask on what basis she feels she is entitled to stay on a position when she is... fail to prove that she has the qualifications that she claimed she had when she applied for this job. So she's our loser of this week, and she should go.
Yeah, I agree.
Great. Our picks of the week. What have you got, Richard?
So a little app that I've been playing with now, we've just spoken about the iPhone 6, and one of the nice features on that device is a super slow motion function that allows you to record 240 frames per second any video. With the iPhone 6 or 6 Plus for that matter. Now, this application that I've been using called... let me just clarify also, the iPhone 6 does come with software that allows you to use your slow motion feature where you can set the slow motion period, or the slow motion parameters at least. But this application called Slow Fast Slow is a handy little application to make use of your slow motion videos or any other video for that matter. But it's just been developed and optimized to really get the best out of the iPhone 6's video capabilities, specifically the slow motion function. And what makes this app so interesting is the fact that you can set various points for your slow motion to kick in, and then obviously return back to normal speed. So you can start a video clip recording a horse running, and then at some point it'll slow down. You can set those parameters in the application and then export it as a video clip, so you can have multiple slowdowns and speed ups within a video, which is very handy, especially if you like to shoot slow motion stuff on the iPhone. The application is called Slow Fast Slow, only available on iOS, and if you've got an iPhone 6, I would say check it out. It also works with normal speed video, so it doesn't just have to be some high speed videos.
And older iPhone models?
It's only for the iPhone 6 and the
only
iPhone 6
iPhone 6. Yeah. Okay, interesting. Great. Richard, my pick this week, it's actually not really a pick. It's more of an information service, because I haven't played with it. So big disclaimer up front. But I've seen a number of people raving about it in the last few weeks. So I thought, let me raise it anyway. And I've got no plans to travel overseas in the foreseeable future, so I don't have a means of really testing the app in the short term. But I've seen a number of people, including Simon Dingle, a former technology journalist that I think most of our listeners know. He was raving about it. A number of other people are also raving about it. It's an app called Roma, And it's available for a number of platforms, iOS and Android. And it's it claims it's can save you 90% in your roaming bills. Now, we all know what a pain it is to roaming. You're paranoid. You have to switch off your data on your phone if you want to receive calls, or you have to go buy a SIM on the ground, and it all gets a bit painful. And the potential is for it to get very expensive very quickly, as many people have discovered if they accidentally start roaming on data and their operating system decides it's going to do
horror stories. Yeah.
Horror stories. Hundreds of thousands of Rand balls when they get back to South Africa. Now, Roma looks like quite an interesting thing. I'm going to read this piece here from Pando Daily. It's just a couple of paragraphs explaining how it works. Once again, I haven't tried it, but a lot of people are raving about it. So if you're traveling soon, go check it out. Maybe report back to us on what you think of it. It's called the Roma app. I'm just going to read here from Pando Daily. It says, Roma is employing the same tactic to market its service, which allows travelers to use their own phone number when traveling abroad, even after they've purchased a foreign SIM card, in an attempt to dodge outrageous roaming fees. The company claims its app, available for iOS and Android, can save its users up to 90% on calls made while they're traveling. The service is simple. You download the application before leaving your home country, park your phone number just before departure, and after you've purchased a foreign SIM card, relaunch the application once to reach your destination. You'll receive calls directed to your existing phone number, which will also be displayed when you call someone else. Now, instead of trying to tell everyone that your temporary phone number is... Now, instead of having to tell everyone what your temporary phone number is while you're traveling, people can just call you, even though you bought a SIM on the ground. Now, I don't fully understand exactly how it works yet, but it sounds fantastic. So I'm going to definitely try this out the next time I travel. It doesn't get around the issue of having to buy a SIM on the ground on your destination, because that's how you're going to save money at the end of the day.
Sure.
But it sounds like an awesome app. It's called Roma. It's available at romaapp.com. So go check it out. If you're traveling soon, but we'd love to hear your views on it, and whether it's managed to save you money, and perhaps you've used it already. Let us know your feedback. Send us an email or leave a... comment at the end of the post on this podcast. Richard, I think that's all we have for this week.
Yeah, great stuff.
Excellent. As always, if you've got any feedback, use the email address. It's info@techcentral.co.za. We'd love to hear from you. And thanks to everyone who gave us feedback on last week's bump episode. It was fantastic to hear from you, and to hear that we're giving you the podcast you guys want.
Nice.
So until next week, from Richard and myself, have a great weekend.
Ciao, ciao.
Cheers. We'll be right back.